Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Alami Podcast, Change Your Company. I'm excited about our conversation today with Jonathan Bennett, who's an executive coach and independent board member, and who's been helping a lot of teams and executives from all over the world, but especially in North America, to drive positive change, to have a high-performing organizations and create an inspiring workplaces. Jonathan, I'm so excited to start our conversation here today.
Thanks so much for having me, Fahad. It's great to be here.
We were a little bit talking about leadership and the challenge of leadership and the challenge of driving execution and driving change of behavior or ownership. What's, based on your experience, the key to ensure that people own the whatever the goals are or whatever the strategy is or the processes or the KPIs or the vision or the values? What do you think is key when it comes to leadership?
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, it's super great to be here. I this comes up all the time in my practice. I get calls all the time from leaders who just kind of wonder, like, why won't they just do it? Right? Like, you know, I just want them to do the stuff, whatever the thing is, the project, get bust through it. And usually once we peel it back a bit, we kind of come up with a kind of concept, which is really a pretty simple one. And it comes from nonviolent communication theory, which is the idea, if you want people to, you know, get stuff done on your behalf, which is really kind of the definition of management, is to do the work with them, not to them and not for them. So let me just take a minute and explain what I mean by that. So often we are subject matter experts, or we've got a deep level of expertise in the team or the business or the vertical that we're in. And we bring all these people around us in a team to get things done. And work comes down the pipeline, or we generate the work and then we delegate it to the people around us. And we keep these delegations. We think we're communicating really well what we want people to do, but actually lots of it is a secret in our head. It's so intuitively understood by us, we don't really communicate to them what really is all of the steps, or what is the fullness of the picture that needs to really kind of happen. And so we, you know, meet with somebody and we're like, hey, you know, we've got this project and I need you to do this and this and this. And then don't forget about this and this and this. And, you know, can you get it done by next Tuesday? And the person's kind of trying to please their boss, right? So they're like, uh-huh, okay, got it. And actually they didn't, or they got some of it, but not all of it. And so they come back next Tuesday and they, you know, put the work in front of you and you're like, okay, but you know, it's not complete, or it's not done how I would do it. And then the leader has one of two responses, which is to double down on the delegation and, you know, look, well, I want you to do this and then this, and you miss this thing, right? Which makes the person feel lousy. Or, and this happens a lot, is they like, I'm just gonna have to do it myself. And they swoop in and they scoop it up. And so what you've created there is a dynamic where you're teaching your employee, or the person that you're working, you know, with you, that they can't possibly do any better than meet your minimum standard, meet your expectations. And no one gets a gold star for meeting expectations. Or if they don't meet your expectations, it's okay, because you'll swoop in like a hero and save the day. Mm. So that's the dynamic that I see over and over and over again. And the way out of that dynamic is, instead of working, you know, like doing work to or for somebody, it's to work with somebody. And when you work with somebody, the way you do it well is to build agreements. And building agreements is a big part of my practice, learning and teaching executives, some of whom are high performing and have built amazing things, but they've just blasted their way through to where they are today and they're exhausted. And what they want to do is create a far more collaborative experience for their workplace, for their team, for their workplace culture. And so working with people and building agreements is a big part of my work.
That's amazing how you describe it or divide it into these categories, which is to for or with. And I really encourage the listeners to check or reflect, where are they on these boxes? You know, where are they spending more time? Like working, you know, kind of doing the work for them, or kind of completely pushing it to them, or doing it with them, or at least guiding them to get the agreement to move forward. And you, what you shared now also reminded me of one workshop I was doing once. I think I was in the US somewhere, and I was running a program. And there is a tool I use called DISC, which is all about personality assessment. And as part of the workshop, there are some videos which shows like a leader who is not adapting to their team member. And while I was playing the video, because in that video, the leader is like, yeah, you know, like do this. And then the direct report comes back after a period of time and didn't do it well and feeling overwhelmed. And I was like, oh my God, that's me. That's me, the leader in that set. And I made this mistake with one of my team members. And it's interesting because, you know, the DISC in a way teaches you that different people have different needs. Some people want like the exact details about how things should be. Some people you want to sit with them because they need the personal touch. But overall, everything you are saying, it applies to any style in a way that you want to guide them. You know, you don't want to kind of just throw it on them.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what happened, so I love the recognition that you had of yourself in that moment. I mean, that happens to all of us, right? Yeah, and when we're talking about things theoretically, it's easy. When you're in the middle of it on a busy Tuesday morning, and there's 1,000 emails and things are coming down the pipe really, really quickly, it's easy to just want to triage and delegate and slice and dice your work up. And it's very difficult to not be directive when there's high volume. Mm-hmm. And so the trick of it is to take a deep breath and a step back and ask yourself, how can I turn the thing that is in front of me? How can I turn that into building an agreement with somebody? Because, you know, like, you know, as you know, when you do, you know, the old line from strategic planning, when, you know, if they plan the battle, they won't battle the plan. It's the same thing, same kind of concept. If you sit with somebody and say, hey, you know, I've just heard from head office, or a new customer has just come in the door, or we've got this new problem. I'd like to build an agreement with you around how we're going to tackle it together. Pieces of this work will be yours. Pieces of it, no doubt, will be mine. How should we begin? And wait, and they'll go, oh, I don't know, maybe create like a project map. Okay, why don't you start typing and we'll talk. And, you know, when you ask the other person to take the notes and to create a document or to create whatever it is, you're also gifting them the opportunity of thinking about it twice, once talking about it, but also capturing the notes. Too often as leaders, and socially, we have done this to women across many, many cultures. They become the like default note takers in corporate settings. And my, you know, I coach a lot of women leaders, and I always encourage them, gift the note taking to the people around you. Allow them to learn. Now, you can take your own private notes, but the notes, the actual notes from the meeting, the minutes or the task list, allow them to build those things, because then they're engaging that part of their learning brain that you want them to do. They're getting it two ways, verbally and writing it down. And you've got a written record of what they think occurred, which is great. They, you know, email that to me after the meeting and we'll take a look. And you can say, you know, in step number 7, don't forget that we talked about blah, blah, blah. And they can tuck that in. And then you've got that written record. So, you know, as you're building this agreement with them, you need to stay super curious. You need to ask open-ended questions. Okay, that sounds reasonable. And then what should we do? Okay, when should that happen by? What are your pieces there? How can I help you achieve that? okay, should we check in frequently for short periods of time, or have you got this and you just want to give it to me at the end? Okay, how will you come to me if things aren't going well? And so if you build in all of this, these questions and the answers to the questions up front, and the person has a lot of autonomy, you're building an agreement with them. And if there's performance management issues that are occurring and have occurred in the past, you can build them into the agreement too. Hey, Fouad, I know you've struggled meeting deadlines in the past, and it's helped you previously if I have a check-in at the halfway mark. Would that be helpful here? How do you want to do that? Do you want to book that meeting now? Even if we don't need it, we can always let it go if we don't need it. Like, so that agreement building gives a lot of empowerment, a lot of accountability to the person who's building it. They've got lots of skin in the game, and the chances of that going well, because they're going to feel like they designed it themselves, goes up.
It's amazing. And when I listen to you, what you're saying, there's a lot of questions there, right? So you are asking them questions, and the questions are in a way how you are involving them, how you are making them own whatever comes out of this, the process and the outcome as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, at the end of it, you know, it should feel like they did it and that they get the victory. And you as the leader get the victory because they're awesome, right? And people are going to look at you because you're able to inspire and create lots of leverage and lots of scale in your team, because you're empowering people to care. You're empowering people to do great work that they are deeply accountable for. And, you know, when you have highly accountable teams, there's inevitably accompanied with strong psychological safety, and they're high performing because they'll look after each other, because they're all feeling like this work is theirs and they care about one another and they want to see success happen. Oh, and by the way, there's our leader over there who, it turned out, created the environment for all this to happen, but they're not owning, you know, that leader's not owning the success on a day-to-day basis, but the sum total of the success, of course, goes to that leader.
Yeah. The other thing which you are talking about, which is powerful, is the fact that they would write down and then send the notes afterward in terms of what's been agreed on. And I think it's also a great way to make them own whatever we are looking at in terms of project or KPIs or a process or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, anything that can move you from kind of the world of the secret into the world of the shared agreement, I'm a fan of. So I think that people learn in lots of different ways. And anytime that, you know, I'm in a conversation, I might be somebody who doesn't take a lot of notes, but I've got a good memory. And but what's happening in my head might not be what's happening in your head. And we just had the same conversation. And so, you know, I know as a facilitator, when I'm doing facilitation work with teams, you know, maybe some presentation happens. If I hold the space and go around the room and I ask a question that sounds something like, what stood out for you the most of that presentation? If there's 10 people in the room, I'm probably going to have 5 or 6 different answers. You know, there'll be some overlap, but it's amazing the things that are, triggering or interesting or draw any individual to the thing. So when you're in a meeting and you're delegating, allowing people to take notes, allowing them to build an agreement with you, moves it from this secret world, this hidden world of like what's in my head and what's in your head, to an explicit agreement building process that's written down. And whether you're using project management software or whether you're just grinding out an email, who cares? You see what happens in their head, and then you have a chance to go back and say, you know, here's some things you missed, or I've now, you know, you've made me think of things that we missed. And then you've got that iteration happening, and it's written down, and so you've got it to refer to later.
Yeah. what you're sharing here is something which could be applied actually beyond just the organizational leadership setting. It could be applied to any setting where it requires influence or leadership, even parenting, for example. Yeah. I mean, actually, I can even connect it to an experience I had recently where a CEO came to me and said, like, who's one of my clients, and said, I want you to coach of one of my manager because he's struggling dealing with people. And this is his email. And if you can, you know, send him an email about it. And I said, no, actually, he needs to approach me. I will not approach him. Because if I approach him, then we started the whole journey that you want him to be coached. And I'm kind of pushing it on him. So he needs to own it from the beginning. And that's why you tell him that if he wants to be coached, that he would approach me.
Oh, and, yeah. And I like that a lot. Yeah.
And I think, and this in a way changed the whole dynamic of the relationship in that case.
Yeah. I mean, there's sort of, you know, from one coach to another, there's kind of nothing worse than the remedial, you know, when somebody comes to you because they've been told to, that's a difficult dynamic to overcome. And it's not impossible, but I'm with you. I like it when people put their hand up and say, this is something that I want.
Yeah, yeah. But in a way, also what you're sharing is a mindset, right? It's a mindset of involving people, of engaging people, and by asking questions, by making them own part of, or maybe the whole area that we are looking at here. It could be applied to parenting. It could be applied to a leader who doesn't have a title in an organization. It's like, okay, how can I influence people? Well, if you want to influence people, start involving them, asking them questions, make them own part of what you are looking at. And I think that will help you accelerate your career and journey to move up in the organization if this is your goal, or to become like a formal leader if this is your goal. Or maybe if you are a first-time or mid-level leader, to move up and to have more responsibilities and more impact and influence.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I sometimes get asked, how do I know when it's working? Like, what are the keys for success? And how do I know if I move to this way of managing and delegating, you know, what does it look like? And there's a story that that happened to me that I remember that I'd like to share, which is I was on a trip and I was in Ottawa in Ontario, Canada. And I was waiting for lunch, and my lunch person was late. And I was texting with a colleague, and my lunch, colleague came and sat down, and I just made a kind of, you know, like as you do, like an off the cuff kind of thing. I'm like, oh, I just found out my whole team just traded out a whole thing. And he was kind of curious. And he goes, what do you mean? And I said, oh, well, this was a management consulting company that I owned. And, you know, it turns out somebody was sick and they had to stay home for their kid. And so somebody else stepped in and they went on this long drive in order to sub and blah, blah, blah. And anyway, I said, it's all good. And he looked at me and he said, you have a self-correcting, self-organizing team. That is the height of what you can go for. So don't just blow over the top of it. Take a minute and celebrate it.
And amazing.
I was like, oh, right. Okay. Like for that moment in that, you know, for that time with those team members, I probably had the most successful team I've ever been a part of. And these things are hard. They're not fixed in stone. You don't like create it and then it's static and you're there. There's no like there. It's a continual journey. But for a good while there, I had this team that barely needed me. And that I think came from all of the things that we're talking about today.
So this is a very good transition to like topic we wanted to touch on briefly, which is how to deal with building a team or an organization or a business, and then at one point walking away. And I think this is a challenge a lot of leaders have. I think you've been through this journey. So what are your learnings from this, and what advice you would give to a leader who has built a team and moved on, or built an organization, which is even more challenging, especially if an organization was built from the heart and it's a passion and or a calling, and then you need to move on. So,
Yeah, it's something that happens to folks, and it's not something that we talk about a lot. And I really think about it as an emotional journey that you go on as a leader. And there's lots of different iterations of it, for sure. It could be as simple as just getting promoted and leaving your team behind, but it could be as complex as a 10-year founder's journey, and then you get an exit at the end, which is what happened to me. And so I think the most important thing that I would kind of want to help folks understand is that the emotional labor of the journey that you do as a leader, you've been doing it for quite a long time. So it doesn't matter if you're gunning for a promotion and eventually you get it and you've got to say goodbye to your team, or over the course of several years, you do some succession planning, create an exit strategy. Maybe you get bought. Maybe there's an M&A. Whatever happens, like that's your exit point. At whatever moment that you're going to do the big reveal to your team and tell them what's happening now in your career, or in your life, and how it's going to affect them, you've been working on this a long time. You've known about this. You've processed it. You've talked to your coach, to your life partner, to your friends. You've been doing a lot of thinking and a lot of churn on this. And now you have to give the folks that work with and for you the grace and space to do that work as well. One of the things that I come into contact with a lot in my clients is they'll be leaving their current company, or they'll be moving on in some way, shape, or form. And they wonder why 2 weeks later, folks are still struggling. And I'm like, well, dude, when did you start this work? Like, when did you first think of this? I'm like, seriously, when did it first get into your head? And like, we pinpoint it back and obviously go, oh, 3 years ago. And you're like, okay, so you've been working on this for 3 years and you want them to get it in 2 weeks? Like, no, like they're riding the Kubler-Ross curve, right? Like they're in denial right now, and they're going to be, you know, some of them will be angry and some of them will be experiencing grief and some of them will be happy and see opportunity. Like any number of emotions is going to happen, but they need time to go through all of that emotional labor just like you did.
Mm. And what advice do you have when it comes to having to stick around? I mean, I've been lucky in a way that in a lot of situations where I moved on, I was able also to move on maybe physically from that space. So I don't have to feel like, okay, everything I created now is collapsing or maybe going different direction, or maybe going the same direction, but not the way I like it to be going, and or based on the values I stand for. So what advice you have there about that?
Yes, well, this is one of the most humbling moments in anybody's career, is that if you are in a situation where you have, you know, in order to have an exit or for whatever reason, a part of the agreement is that, you know, legal agreement is that they've stapled your foot to the floor and you got to stay put for a while. It is very humbling to watch somebody else come in and do the work differently than you might have done it. It's just as humbling to have to sit there and keep a poker face if they do it, you know, in your mind worse. But I'll tell you what's even better is if they do it better, like that, and you're sitting there going, oh, wow, I wouldn't have done it like that. And it seems to be working better. Oh, my God. It's really humbling. And so I think just to be as kind to yourself as you can during those periods. Obviously, maybe there's a payday that's down the road and you have to stay put. Maybe your company's been bought and you have agreed to stay on for a year or 18 months or whatever it is. And obviously, you know, that's a hardship, but there are bigger hardships in this world than that one. Because there's a payday waiting for you, you know, at the end, but it is still your baby. It is still this thing that you've built. You've put your blood, sweat, and tears into it, and to watch somebody else do it differently, good, bad, or indifferent, but it's different than you did it or would do it, is really hard to withstand. And so I would just say, try to stay as self-aware and have a lot of compassion for yourself as you go through that, because you know, you don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be that person that is hanging around, is causing, you know, distress and fuss because they can't let go. That's really not a great look. And so, you know, a lot of self-awareness can really help.
And it's amazing you're sharing this, because I know that you've been on a journey yourself, like going through similar case and yeah. how you evolved because of this. And you've been helping leaders going through challenges like this one.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate enough to have kind of arranged a management buyout from my company that I founded. And so after 10 years, I had this amazing young woman coming through, and she was clearly the next CEO. And, you know, I was standing in her way, and I was kind of getting ready to leave as well. And so we were able to do some succession planning. We involved the whole company. But ultimately, I had to stay put. It was partly because of the pandemic. To just make sure that the transition was a smooth one. So I was there for about 18 months, not as the CEO, but still as technically the owner. And I just went and led projects like I would have done 10 years ago before I'd scaled the company. And so even that was an exercise in humility, like out the front of the room. I felt a bit rusty, you know, leading client projects and doing some of that stuff. But I think ultimately what I took from all of that was that that there are ages and stages, and that to stay super aware of how you're showing up and what's going on for you, and that it's normal to feel a bit of jealousy or a bit of discontent or, you know, because somebody is going to do it differently than you. Mm. And now I'm able to sort of take that 18 months of experience and translate that into support for all the executives that I am able to, and, you know, and owners and founders that I do coaching work with.
That's great. Jonathan, what final advice you would leave leaders with?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest thing you can do is develop your own self-awareness of the kind of leader that you are. We all have areas of our like skill set and approach and personality. And the more you can do to understand how you're showing up and how other people see you, the more you can do to support your own growth and development. And so whether that's, like you said, using psychological tests, whether that's going to a coach, whether that's using tools like 360 feedback, you know, it is a journey, and we all get increasingly, you know, better at it, hopefully over time. But that level of acceptance that I am not my title. Mm. I am a person, and the people around me are people, and I'm going to meet them where they're at as humans. I'm going to treat them with kindness and respect. And if I do those things, they'll probably be loyal. They'll probably care about me, and I can care about them. And from there, we can build strong teams. But that all begins with a level of self-awareness. Who am I? Where am I at? What makes me tick? What am I good at? Where are the areas of my personality and my skills and experiences that are not strong? How do I go about getting better at those things? And that's, I think, what I, you know, experience as a coach day in, day out.
That's amazing. And self-awareness, as you said, it's a foundation for everything. So, and having that would help us transform ourselves and also leverage whatever strengths we have to make the biggest impact. Jonathan, it's been great having you on my show, and your work is very much aligned with the purpose of this podcast, which is all about creating inspiring high-performing workplaces. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Poet. It's great. And if anybody wants to chat, feel free to reach out. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, and I like spending time with people to get to know folks long before I ever become their coach. So happy to chat anytime.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you, Jonathan. And to all the listeners, thank you again, and stay inspired and make the biggest impact, not only within your area of responsibility, but beyond it.